show Monster Mania convention, they apparently they sold out their venue. They needed to move to a bigger venue, but they didn't. They had a great cast. Wolf Photography was there doing the pictures. Lines got crazy long for photo ops and all kind of stuff, and people were complaining that the staff wasn't informed as far as where people needed to be for photo ops, and people were getting frustrated, and it was real crowded. So a bunch of people, they were like, "We got to get some air." They went outside. Fire marshal showed up. Fire marshal showed up, and people that went outside weren't allowed to go back in. So people missed out on their photo packages they had paid for, and it was just a huge mess, man.
Where was
this?
Big
fallout. So up on the East Coast. I'm not sure exactly where, but it was the Monster Mania convention.
Sometimes getting too big is not a good thing. I've taken some, not heat, but criticism for Scary Dad Show Volume 1 being in the smaller venue, and we could have had a bigger venue. We could have sold more tables. We could have had more vendors, or we could have had fewer vendors and charged more. We could, whatever. At the end of the day, we broke straight even.
We accomplished what we wanted to accomplish.
We accomplished what we wanted to accomplish. I think of all of the vendors we have, there's like two that haven't, it's not that they've said they wouldn't, but I've only had two that haven't said that they would do it again in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're ready to sign on the line as soon as we
schedule
the next, get the venue set up. I erred on the side of caution, and I succeeded. I don't,
right.
Next time we're going to expand a little bit, and then we're going to expand a little bit.
Just grow with it.
And what I've found in this industry is that if you are actually honest with people and you deliver what you say, you're in the top 99 percentile.
Right.
Because nobody else does that, which is freaking weird. But hey, that's how you want to build a business. Go ahead. Anyway, we're recording a show. This is a Scary Dad podcast. This is not a knock. Horror cons content.
There's one of those things going on Facebook right now that, you know, sometimes are worthy mentioning.
No, I get it. But every now and then we forget that the button's on.
Yeah, we just you guys got to realize before the button's pushed, we sit here for about 30 minutes just shooting the shit, talking about things. And you guys don't hear a lot of the stuff that we do bullshit about, but you'd probably enjoy it anyway.
Well, this one lands on March 26th. It is episode 76 of the Scary Dad podcast.
It's now 6 days in the spring.
It is. Mosquitoes are killer, but it's still kind of cold, which is weird. But hey, here in a couple of weeks, the air will be just like nothing but mosquitoes, and it'll be 140 degrees outside, and everybody will be complaining about how hot it is. So I'm just fine. And when I said, "Hey, Scott, what do you want to talk about this week?" And he said, "Well, let's talk about werewolves." And I was kind of stricken with, I had a giant oh shit moment. Like, this is going to be a quadruple episode.
There's a lot to talk about werewolves.
There's a lot.
But with us talking about the creature recently, Gilman and Universal Monsters, that kind of just popped into my head. Because that's a major one for sure.
Absolutely. And I said to him, I said, "Hey, Scott, do you want to talk about lycanthropy, the disease? Do you want to talk about hirsute humans who just grow hair and long teeth and are just kind of weird that way, and they're circus sideshow freaks? Do you want to talk about myths and legends? Do you want to talk about the scare in France when they were basically eating rye bread that was covered in acid, so they were all tripping balls for 12 years, killing each other and like turning into werewolves?" Or do you want to talk about movies and books and that kind of stuff? And then he said, "Hey, let's talk about movies and books." And then I Googled movies and books, and I was like, "Holy crap. Do you want to talk about maybe four movies and books?"
Because there's a lot.
There's a lot. So we're not going to get fully into the whole werewolf lore. We're just going to touch some of our favorite movies.
And yeah, talk about just some of the movies that if you haven't seen them, you should.
But first, it's time for old business.
We must do old business first.
All right. There's not a tremendous amount of old business, but there are a whole lot of birthdays. So I'm going to start at the beginning and I'll go to the end because that's the logical things to do. On this date in 1830, the Book of Mormon was first published. And it launched a million bicycles.
And next thing you know, Matt and Trey did a low plate.
It's true.
Then my daughter had to pick a musical to reenact for middle school when I was pushing Book of Mormon so hard. I was like, please, please, please.
He didn't do Cannibal?
No. I forgot what she picked. It was horrible, though.
All right. On this date in 1931, the Ho Chi Minh Communist Youth Union was established in Vietnam.
Sounds like a fun group.
Yeah. So back before World War II even got started, this was going on in Vietnam. So you can imagine they had campfire songs.
Yeah.
All right. And on this date in 1997, the 39 bodies of the Heaven's Gate cult suicides were found.
Which we talked about.
Yep, we talked about it. I don't even know what episode we talked about. Our cult episode. That was a hard one, too. Mm-hmm. That was tough. Rubber suffering, latex, and fake blood. That's something that... it's fun. When you start talking about, like, crazy people, it's hard.
Harming innocence, it's...
All right, let's get to the birthday list. On this date in 1874, poet Robert Frost was born. On this date in 1881, Guccio Gucci, the founder of the Gucci Company.
Gucci.
That dude's first name was Guccio. You knew he had to do something. He's like, I got the killer name. I got to do something with this. 1904, a lot of people haven't heard of him, but everybody should. Joseph Campbell, he was a... expert on mythology and kind of an anthropologist, and he explained, he translated a lot of Carl Jung's work. Okay. Jung was a protege, I guess. I don't know if I'm not exactly sure his relationship to Sigmund Freud, but essentially as the whole concept of psychotherapy and breaking the mind away from the body started to become kind of a fad in psychology. Carl Jung explained, like, you know, the subconscious, the dream aspects, and all this different stuff. And then Joseph Campbell did a whole lot of work on, and Jung as well, about the archetype in stories. So basically what it comes down to is there's like three or four central plots to all storytelling. It's like the hero's journey, the tragedy, mm-hmm. you know, different things like that. And at the end of the day, pretty much you can break down just about any story into these certain basic building blocks. And what makes them important and what makes them effective and what makes certain storytelling effective is there are certain things that humans recognize as pure good, pure evil, dangerous, mm-hmm. Love and hate, war. These sorts of things are just integral to our being and who we are. And whenever we see them well personified in a drama, we are drawn to them more than in other things.
Right.
And that's what creates our mythologies, and that's what creates our histories and things like that. George Lucas was a big, big, I don't want to say a fan, but he was well-versed in Joseph Campbell. And he essentially sketched out Star Wars as a classic hero's journey.
Right.
And the reason a lot of people say, and even Lucas himself say, that it's so effective is that he took, you know, before the prequels washed it all away, but he took Darth Vader, and it doesn't matter why he is who he is, you know that he is the worst of the worst. He is pure evil, bad guy, one and done. And so therefore, Darth Vader strikes a primal nerve. You know, you're drawn to him. You don't know why, but you know that he's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Skywalker, same thing. He's a Christ figure. He's the ultimate hero. And the way, you know, the way he travels from innocence to experience and then transcends is the story of pretty much all of our myths and legends and gods and goddesses and all that stuff. Anyway, very, 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 very... interesting. If you've never checked it out, you should check out Joseph Campbell. All right, 1931, Mr. Leonard Nimoy. 1934, Alan Arkin. Everybody knows that guy.
Yep.
1940, James Caan, the man whose name I can never remember unless it's sitting right in front of me. The Godfather, Misery.
Yeah, he's been in a lot. He's a great actor. I enjoy his stuff.
Let's see. 1948, Mr. Aerosmith, Steven Tyler. 1950, what was his name? Ed Grimley, Martin Short.
Okay.
1959, why don't you take a seat, Mr. Chris Hansen? And
you want some cookies and milk, don't you?
In 1968, James Iha, The Smashing Pumpkins.
You a big Pumpkins fan or no?
I like the records. They're not a good live band.
Okay.
I've seen them a couple times.
There's a few bands like that.
Mm-hmm. They're a good studio band. I like Siamese Dream. I didn't really like much else.
The first time I saw Zombie Live, actually, I didn't care for them too much.
Mm.
The second time was great. I think it was the venue they were in.
Probably. I've seen them several times, and they never fail to...
Now, the one band that just has always blown me away live from the first time I saw them is Ministry. That is, they're awesome.
Yeah. I've seen them at least twice. Yeah, probably twice. KMFDM is the one that I'm thinking of. Remember them?
Yeah.
I saw them a couple times, too. I was never a big KMFDM fan, but, man, they have some rabid live shows. They're killer. let's see here. All right. Notable deaths on this date in 1827. We said goodbye to Ludwig von Beethoven. Ludwig van... And in 1995, we'll give a shout out to Mr. Eazy-E.
Eric Wright.
That is a just like a massive difference.
Yeah, in music.
In pop music right there. Eazy-E and
Eric Wright.
Yeah. And that is, for me, the end of old business. So that werewolf is howling. What you got for new? Let's take a break and we'll be seeing it in just a second.
Yes, sir.
This is the story of two young American students traveling through England on the night of the full moon.
Did you hear that?
I heard that.
What was it?
Could be a lot of things.
Fate let one live.
That lunatic must have been a very fierce fellow.
Wasn't a lunatic.
What?
A wolf.
Oh, be serious, would you?
And now everything is changing. Changing. Changing.
Good Lord.
John Landis, the brilliant young director of Animal House and the Blues Brothers, has turned a classic tale of terror into something new. Something different.
Excuse me.
A naked American man stole my balloon.
I'm a werewolf.
An American werewolf in London. Something different.
And we're back.
Yes, we are. Hope you enjoyed that interlude.
It was either Ludwig van or Eazy-E or something in between, because there's so much in between.
Okay, are you familiar with an artist named Boss Logic? He kind of does mashup pictures of. He does a lot of horror stuff where he shows what a horror movie would be like. He's the one that did those Scooby Doo pictures that I remember.
Okay.
I showed you. Okay, he recently did one. You know who John Boyega is?
Uh-huh.
Okay, Finn. He did one.
He cut him up as Blade.
With John Boyega's Blade. How bad? So now talk is going around saying, you know, maybe John Boyega should be Blade. Well, it got back to John Boyega, and he said, Wesley is Blade.
That's true.
I'm not Blade.
I follow John Boyega on like Instagram.
Uh-huh.
That dude's a cool guy.
He seems to be.
When Force Awakens first came out, and there's like people going back and forth, and it's like, what is this, and who's that, and whatever. Like, he was taking it in stride. I mean, obviously he's in a Star Wars movie, so he's probably got people that are telling him what he can and can't say.
Right.
But what for whatever it is, like his. You know, he was showing videos of, like, his nephew or something watching Star Wars and, like, getting all amped up about the lightsabers and stuff, and he's just like, isn't this cool? I'm sure he's like, hell yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's every little boy's dream, is to be in a Star Wars movie.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, imagine if your uncle was Uncle Finn.
Right.
You know, like, that's freaking awesome.
No doubt,
yeah, he's a cool guy.
Well, they interviewed Wesley Snipes about it at one point, saying, you know, if they do a Blade 4, you know, is that going to be your thing? And he said, for damn sure, you know, I'd love to do Blade again. He said, but at the same time, I'd love to do some other Marvel characters too. So that would be pretty cool. I'm not sure what other characters are left that he would be a fit for, but he also said, at the same time, I may be stuck in the role of Blade, which I have no problem doing again.
Dude, the dude hasn't aged.
Oh, no.
Snipes, he hasn't aged. He looks the same as he ever has.
Right. And he just, he did so well in that role.
And with the, I mean, he was, I don't want to say the original, but man, as a black action star, he was killing it in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
he was in so many great movies.
He got in trouble with the IRS, and that's a whole bunch of stupidity. And it's not all totally his fault. I mean, he was given some bad advice. But, you know, it's like when people talk about black action stars and the box office draw and stuff, they always mention Will Smith. And, hey, not to take anything away from Will, he's badass. But
Wesley Snipes is
badass. I mean, he's... And I say was because it was so long ago that he did movies, but I mean, he was really, really good.
He went into the Blade role, especially so much. He went ahead, he took martial arts classes, he took weapons classes, he learned, he did a lot of work for that role.
That's what made Demolition Man so awesome, because he was so, his character was just such a badass.
Right.
And he was likable, because Wesley was just charismatic. So he was an evil son of a bitch, but he was badass.
Smooth. He was smooth.
Yeah. So,
okay, other movie news. What do you get when you mix Jurassic Park with The Walking Dead?
Zombie dinosaurs?
The Jurassic Dead.
You gotta shoot them in the head.
The story of a zombie T-Rex that's dropped into the United States. Okay, so it's gonna be released this summer at the same time as that other Jurassic Park movie that's coming out. So, the storyline synopsis is, a unit of mercenaries must team up with a group of tech geek students after America is struck with the EMP attack. Deep in the desert, they find the source of the terror, some mad scientists that created a living dead T-Rex. It bites people, it turns them into zombies.
Well,
so yeah, Jurassic Dead, look for it this summer. Actually, at the movie theaters. This isn't going to be a direct-to-DVD.
Dude, seriously, there's certain things, well, like Tremors, okay? If you look at Tremors again, you know, like, not even on the surface, but the way they advertised it
should be a direct-to-DVD movie.
Well, it was a comedy.
Yeah,
it wasn't a comedy.
It was
a damn scary movie.
It was a great movie.
I mean, it had some funny scenes. It had some
it had
funny
some rough
lines.
Scenes too. Like, I mean, you talked before, the guy that dies climbing up on the tower. You know, they go up there and he started to decompose and his skin's all dried out and and the guy that his head is under his hat in the ground. It's got some scary stuff in it.
I mean, that was a straightforward horror movie. I think, again, sometimes they're scared of horror. They're afraid they're not going to be able to sell tickets, so they put something else on it. I remember, and they do this a lot with movies. I remember when Friends got really, really popular. Or not, it was popular. But there was a movie with David Schwimmer in it. It was called The Pallbearer. And it was like him and Gwyneth Paltrow. And, you know, so comedic actor, mm-hmm. And the previews, like, were like, you know, it's a rom-com.
Right.
But in reality, it was, like, the saddest movie you've ever seen. It was all about, like, here's this guy, and he gets a phone call, and, like, so-and-so died, and he doesn't even remember who he is, so he goes and looks him up in the yearbook, and it's this guy that he knew in high school, but he wasn't even really friends with, but, like, this is the one person his mom remembered this guy ever being friends with. And so she asks him to be a pallbearer in his funeral. And it's just like the saddest freaking downer movie. And I'm sitting here watching this thing being like, why the hell are we watching this? This sucks. I was lied to. I was robbed. But,
All right, moving on. In Argentina, there's a farm right now where, they've had a spate of just really horrific animal mutations going on. So it's kind of making a little bit of headline now. They're blaming it on pesticides and GM crops that are being grown in the area. But the most recent one was a pig was born with a human face.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I don't have a picture of it, but it was spotted. The mother had a litter of like 8 or 9 piglets, and this one had a human face. It wasn't able to suckle because of the deformity on his face and ended up dying. But they've also had, as of late, they had a goat born with two heads. They had a calf with 2 heads and 6 legs. And then they had a goat with a human face on it also. Just all in this one little area of Argentina. They got just some crazy shit going on.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And I know where I'm not going.
And they also, a little bit further away in El Capon, in northeastern Argentina, they had a real-life spider pig that was born. It was a pig with 8 legs. So it was the actual spider pig. But yes, they believe that pollution is just the main cause of what's going on with these animals out there. But it's kind of freaky, man. Just all of a sudden, in this one area, they're having all this weird shit happen. You
know, is it the
apocalypse?
Again.
Is it the apocalypse? Is it
possibly
pesticides? You never know. Okay. The latest should be from Florida. It's out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Okay. So, Ginger Sharp, 34, was on probation, placed on probation after she got convicted of forgery. As part of her probation, she has to submit to periodic drug testing. So, she goes in for a drug test, comes back dirty. So, they handcuff her and they got her to question her. She tells her PO, if you go look at my purse, there's a prescription bottle in there for my prescription medication. So, the probation officer goes and he finds a prescription bottle in there with a legal prescription for methamphetamine. It was, the prescription bottle actually said she was prescribed methamphetamine in 5 milligram tablets. So the probation officer, apparently not this sharpest knife in the drawer, said, okay, unhandcuffed her and let her go. But he kept the bottle. So he called the doctor and said, hey, I got a question. Did you prescribe this woman 5 milligram tablets of methamphetamine? And the doctor, of course, laughed his ass off and said, why in the hell would I prescribe methamphetamine to anybody? So she's been rearrested for forgery and identity theft for forging this prescription from this doctor.
That's awesome.
She thought that she'd get away. Her friend, she says that her friend told her that she could get away with it if she could.
That is super cool, though. That is awesome.
Who does that, man? Who thinks that that would fly?
I ate a bagel, man. It had sesame seeds on it. Leave me alone.
Yeah, so that's our new business for the night.
Let's take a break and, I don't know, just go take a shower. That'll get dirty. All right. After Argentina and Albuquerque, that's just gross. All right.
We shall return.
What do you see?
The howling. Somewhere in this city. In this human jungle. It begins.
Just try. He's right there.
What do you see?
What's there, Karen?
What do you see, Karen?
What's there?
Somewhere in these woods, in this primal, sensuous, secret place, lies an experience too terrifying for words. And now, all anyone can do is watch and wait.
Tonight I'm going to show you something. Make you believe.
The Howling.
And we're back.
Yes, hope you didn't miss us. So, werewolves.
Well,
so where to begin? Because werewolves have been around for as long as any of the universal monsters.
Longer. I mean, really, the Frankenstein's 200 years old. I mean, really, werewolves and vampires are pretty
synonymous.
Yeah, they. I mean, they go back as far as like folklore and culture and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we're not even going to talk about the legends of the werewolf in real life.
We're just going to talk about adaptations in movies and books.
You know, I pulled this little thing. It's like talking about literary origins, and it goes all the way back to Greek mythology. There's a story of an Arcadian king called Lycaon who tested Zeus by serving him a dish of his slaughtered and dismembered son to see if Zeus was really all-knowing. As punishment for his trickery, Zeus transformed Lycaon into a wolf and killed his 50 sons by lightning bolts. But he revived Lycaon's son, Nyctimus, who the king had slaughtered. But then there's medieval romances, there's folklore, there's all kinds of different stuff. But I mean, it goes all the way back to, I mean, Zeus cursed and created the first werewolf.
Right.
So, I mean, that goes a long way back. For our purposes, I figured we'd start at the 1941 movie starring Lon Chaney Jr.
Yes, The Man of a Thousand Faces.
The Wolfman. Simple title.
Which has been remade with the same name later on, but the original was The Wolfman, but Lon Chaney.
It has been. Prior to The Wolfman, there were several movies, and there's something that we would talk about, you know, eventually. But even they made silent movies. It says, in the cinema during the silent era, werewolves were portrayed in canine forms such as The Werewolf from 1913, Wolf Blood in 1925. The first feature film to portray an anthropomorphic werewolf was The Werewolf of London in 1935. That established the canon that the werewolf always killed what he loves the most. The main werewolf of this film was a dapper London scientist who retained some of his style and most of his human features after his transformation.
Okay.
Also a really good song by Warren Zevon.
Werewolf in London.
But it was the Wolfman and the character of Larry Talbot, played by Lon Chaney Jr. in 1941's The Wolfman, that actually catapulted werewolf into the public.
The realm.
Yeah. So after that, the Wolfman became a thing. And let's see, the theme of lycanthropy or the disease, the curse, reached its standard treatment in the film, which contained the now famous rhyme, "Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and the autumn moon is bright." So the wolfbane and the autumn moon and everything, and it's kind of funny because that poem has actually been transposed onto folklore, but in reality, it wasn't a legend. It was written by the screenwriter.
Right.
Kurt Seidenbeck actually wrote that. So it's kind of cool to write, what was that, five lines of prose that are now being attributed to ancient folklore.
Right.
That's a pretty good poem. But, so let's talk about the Wolfman. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen The Wolfman. I mean, I've been trying to catch up with Universal Monsters.
I haven't seen the original. I haven't seen that in a long time.
It's been a while for me as well. I mean, I do remember the... He did change by the bite, but he was not necessarily affected by the moon.
Right.
He was... and he couldn't really control it. He just became the Wolfman.
He's more like hulking out.
Right. But he was killed by that silver cane.
Yep.
So a lot of stuff in the early Wolfman movie actually became kind of canon for
part of the mythos
for
the future movies.
Yeah. So what's your favorite werewolf movie kind of in general?
It's a tie for the most part, but if I had to pick one over the other, and a lot of people would disagree with me on this, but I would pick The Howling above the other one that I love. And mainly because The Howling, I also enjoyed The Howling 2 a lot because Sybil Danning was in it, which is a horrible reason to love a horror movie. But as a youth, Sybil Danning was like way up there when it came to the original old style Skinamax type thing. So The Howling has always been way up there with me. The special effects in it were great, even though the other one I'm thinking of, the special effects were actually better. Because, you know, the earliest real, I guess you could say, modern version of the werewolf that I really remember was from Fright Night. And the special effects of the transformation of Evil Ed, it blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
And that same effect was also used in, I'm sure you're going to, this might be one of the ones that you pick as your favorite, American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, I think.
Which that one, The Howling and that one kind of tie for me. And I said only because The Howling, because they had the second one, I just kind of just love that.
Those yeah, movies. You kind of like wrap the mythos together.
Right.
Yeah, American Werewolf in London for me for sure, but we'll talk about that in a second. I remember a couple of things about The Howling, and both of those things have nothing to do with the movie itself, except for it was my dad quoting lines.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used to, like, whenever we'd go to a steakhouse or whatever, like, remember the end of The Howling? Was it the end of The Howling where
the newscasters?
She orders a steak, and she's like, "How would you like it?" And she's like, "Rare."
That was in The Howling 2.
Was at the end of Howling 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's always like, you know, so we'd go to a steakhouse and be like, "How do you like it?" And he's like, "Rare." Actually, medium rare, but still.
Howling 1 ended with the news.
Yeah,
the
with live D. Newscast. Wallace. Yeah, yeah. With D. Wallace Stone.
Wolfing out.
And yep. She turned into like a little, like such a cute little werewolf.
Yeah.
she certainly didn't turn into like the evil lycan.
Right.
But.
But yeah, Howling was just a game changer for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. The special effects on Howling were awesome. And again, I probably just have them mixed up in my head. But
American Werewolf in London, though, the special effects in that one took the Fright Night effects to a different level.
When that dude started scratching that bullet out of his head, and he's like, "You want a piece of my mind?"
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That, and he's like, tears away chunks of his flesh, and it's just, yeah. I mean, there's just. I mean, that's a seminal movie. That came out in 1981.
Yeah.
So I was 6. And there were certain scary movies that my folks wouldn't let me watch, and then there was others. And I remember there are certain scenes in The Howling that I remember specifically. Like oh my God. And that piece of my mind scene was one. And then her changing into the werewolf at the, you know. And I've forgotten where the rare steak came in, but yeah. That's imagine going out and trying to cover a news story on a serial killer of all places, of all people. You find out your place you went to is full of werewolves. Full of
werewolves, right.
But same year, American Werewolf in London.
Yes.
And that is, to me, still perhaps one of the scariest movies in general.
Yeah.
And I think what makes it scary, because although the special effects were groundbreaking and incredible, they're just absolutely phenomenal. It was John Landis who directed it.
Yes.
And prior to that, he did Animal House.
Right.
You know.
Stripes.
He was a comedic director, and American Werewolf in London is slated as a horror comedy.
Yeah, it has dark humor, but.
But the problem with that is, especially being a young kid and not really quite understanding either horror or comedy, the lightening of the burden with the comedy makes the dark themes that much darker. And so the undead buddy, who's really kind of comic relief as he's deteriorating, and he's like, "Hey man, you got to kill yourself."
Yeah.
You know, that's supposed to be funny, and it is. As a grown up watching it, you're like, "Okay, that's kind of." But as a kid, you're like, "Oh my God!"
Yeah,
like this makes all the more worse because this guy's just kind of nonchalant about
falling apart.
Yeah,
dying.
Yeah. And then just kind of some of the comedic timings. It's weird because I don't even know. There's certain words and there's certain phrases that just kind of come into existence and you never realize they were there before. It's kind of like when you hear a word that you never heard of before, then you see it everywhere.
Yeah.
I remember somebody talking about like Richard Pryor or something, and they were like, "Oh, his timing. Oh, he's such good timing. And I'm like, fucking talking about timing, like he told jokes. It wasn't like he was a drummer. And then you find out later on, like, oh, you know, it's just the way. It's like it's like you're watching a crowd, and then
the delivery.
This is how you deliver it. Was like right at this perfect moment, you can tell this joke, and it has so much more impact than if you told it a second before, 2 seconds later. You have the build up, then you just nail it, drive it home. And the thing about American Werewolf in London is so much just the timing. And it's a comedic timing drop, but again, they're dropping horror elements on you.
Right.
So that makes it that much scary. Like, even the very end, at the very end of the movie, werewolf's dead, everything's over with, everything's good, you know, and everybody's still terrified, and then it just fades to black and starts playing Bad Moon Rising, you know, and it's just like, it's such a jarring hit, but it doesn't resolve, it doesn't make you feel better.
Right.
It's supposed to be funny, but it's not. It makes everything so much worse. It's just a pure horror. It's a tragic movie. And it makes it so great to me. You know?
It's a great. It's like I said. That's why that and the Howling kind of. The only thing to me that puts Howling over is the sequel, which I enjoyed also. Because it just continued the whole thing. What you got next?
Oh, I was. Didn't even really kind of go chronologically because there's a lot of stuff.
I'll throw one up there. The next one that I would say would be at the top of my list is, of course, Silver Bullet.
Silver Bullet was one of those. It's weird because, again, I think there's a Stephen King renaissance. There's a lot of stuff that was Stephen King that was panned, critically panned. People didn't like it. Even Stephen King himself was like, oh, you know, but. So I remember being much younger and, you know, hearing about Silver Bullet, and it was just another failed Stephen King attempt. Then when I saw it, I was like...
See, I've always loved it, man.
No, that's a damn good movie right there.
Just the cast in it. Corey Haim is just incredible in it as, the protagonist in the movie. But then you got his drunk uncle. That role itself,
who happens to be Gary Busey, who's
Gary
scary
Busey,
in his own right, before he even really went really crazy.
It's a great movie, you know. It you feel good one moment, the next moment you're like, holy shit,
yeah.
You know, and it has a twist to it. It just the movie's so well done.
Well, and the person who is the werewolf is the most unexpected person of all.
Right. Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make it's jarringly. It's like, yep. it doesn't make sense. Like that guy.
Right.
Which, once he reveals, then
he's the darkest evil character you can imagine.
Right, but before that, he wasn't.
Right.
You know, and he's just taken over more and more by that demon self.
Right.
And we were at your house watching that, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I still, it's one of those things, like, they got drunk Uncle Busey freaking convinced that this is happening to the point that they go have a silver bullet made. And it's like 10 minutes before the moon's supposed to go down, and he's like, ah, screw it, let's go to bed. It like just completely like flips the switch on everything, and you're just like, Uncle Busey, just chill.
It's coming.
Because he's like, nah, man, it's time to go to bed. And then that
you
window
guys
breaks,
got me again.
And that window breaks, and that
the
is
look on his face.
He was literally like, I wonder how they actually scared him that way, because he was scared as hell whenever that window breaks.
Silver Bullet is definitely a movie that I still enjoy watching it today. Well, just like the rest of them.
It's so good. That's what I was saying. It's like, you know, it's one of those that you hear things and you're like, really? And then you watch it and you're like, I don't understand why people didn't like this. This is awesome.
It's a great movie, man. Now, one that seems to be very popular, but I actually never liked, is Wolf with Jack Nicholson.
Okay.
I found that one just, it moves slow for me.
I enjoyed that movie. Let's put it like that. There's a special place in my heart for that movie. I enjoyed that movie. But I think the reason primarily that I did enjoy that movie was because at that point in the early 90s, or kind of close to the midnight, there was almost what you would call a Universal Monsters renaissance. There was a video game where there was like Frankenstein and Dracula fighting against Street Fighter characters. Mm-hmm. And there were sort of things that were bringing like the monster movies kind of back to the surface.
Right.
And then like right in the middle of that, they dropped Wolf on you. And it had Jack Nicholson and Michelle Pfeiffer in it, and even James Spader. And I still think that was probably one of the better villain roles that he's ever played. Mm. I mean, it was a, It was kind of a throwaway, like, popcorn movie, but it was, I thought it was fun.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it. Like, it wasn't scary at all.
See, I hadn't seen it in a long time, but my memory of it, I remember just not getting into it.
I just, like, I don't think James Spader is, like, he was a good Pretty in Pink, you know, jock douche, but he was also, like, 30 when he was playing, like, a 16-year-old, and he's like, but he was a good bad guy in that movie. I enjoyed that. So, and then Michelle Pfeiffer, she just knocks out of the park no matter what she does.
Oh yeah,
you know, she could host a cooking show and I'd watch that thing all day long. So
now, one that doesn't get talked about a lot, it does get talked about, is actually, I find that it's being talked about more than it had been before, was Ginger Snaps. You ever saw Ginger Snaps?
You know, that's one that I have not.
And I think
I need to catch that, because apparently it's horror movie sacrilege if you haven't seen that movie.
Ginger Snaps is really cool. One, because both lead characters are women. There's no dude. There's no male werewolf you're dealing with. It's Ginger. And her sister are the main characters of the movie. But I think the reason it didn't get a lot of play is this was a movie about some girls in high school that are obsessed with death. And, you know, one of them becomes a werewolf and is killing people. And it came out right when the Columbine Massacre happened. Mm. So it kind of got downplayed a little bit. You know, nobody wanted to really back it, because at the time, shit like that was just, you shouldn't talk about it.
Right, right.
So I think that's why it took a while for it to gain some momentum. But Ginger Snaps is a cool-ass movie.
I'll have to check it out. It's like we were talking
about Heathers. It's more of a dark comedy, but it's got some...
It's one of those things, like we were talking about Heathers.
Yeah.
Where... The culture today would not accept a movie like Heathers at all.
Making jokes about teen suicide.
At all. Well, teen suicide and murder.
And murder, like, right.
You know. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it was a damn good movie. Mm-hmm. And I totally, like, you know, with the different things going on, you know, it's like just recently with the shooting in Florida, then that meant that, I don't know if they delayed it or they just stopped promoting Death Wish. And then, you know, there's just certain things where they're like, okay, well, we don't want to, like, release a movie about mass murder right after a giant mass murder. And I understand that, so. But yeah, that's one that slipped by me, actually.
Yeah, I would highly recommend checking it out. You want to talk about Twilight movies?
I don't want to talk, but no, it's part of an anthology, but one of the best werewolf stories was that in Trick or Treat with Anna Paquin.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm not going to, I will spoiler alert this one, but if you've never seen Trick or Treat, that whole movie is, it's a perfect Halloween movie.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's a generationally perfect Halloween movie, kind of like Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown is. And it is a horror movie. So it's not a kid's movie, but it is a perfect film in that it's a movie about Halloween, and it is just bleeds orange and black the whole way through, and it's just so great. But there's a scene in the movie. Well, there's a guy, let's call him, he is a murderer pretending to be a vampire, and he's looking for prey. And he comes upon a virginal Anna Paquin and her girlfriends that are all out partying on Halloween night. And they invite him. She's like, hey, come with us. And they go to a costume shop, and they're all being sexy, and they're doing their, you know, sexy girl thing. And they're drinking, and they're picking up guys, and they're going to take them to an orgy in the woods, and that's just what's going to happen. And, like, vampire guy's like, this is awesome, because I'm going to, like, you know, kill all these chicks.
Right.
And they get out to the woods, and the whole time, you know, Anna Paquin, she's like the virginal one. She's like the good guy in all horror movies ever. And she keeps saying, it's like, and her friends are like, you're going to do it this time, right? And she's like, well, I don't know. And they're like, well, you have to do it. It's just what you do. If you're normal, this is what you do. And she's like, okay, fine. And they get out in the woods, and they all start dancing and gyrating, and it's like this whole freaking Return of the Living Dead scene where it's like naked chicks everywhere, and they're all dancing with their boobs hanging out. And it's like, okay, their clothes are off. What's next? And all of a sudden, the skin starts coming off. And as the skin starts coming off, the werewolves start coming out of the skin. And then they start attacking the guys that right. they brought back to the campfire. And they're just ripping them apart. It is so cool.
Really?
And again, that was... I said spoiler at the beginning.
Right.
That's a big reveal, but it's fucking awesome. That movie's been around for 10 years now. Yep. So, if I spoiled it for you, I'm sorry, but that's just breaks. Need to watch these movies before they get 10 years old. All right, so that's me. What you got?
Okay, are you familiar with the 2002 movie Dog Soldiers? Ever heard of it? I have never seen it before, but it came up on my research.
Is that
today
the one with the cover with the wolf coming out of the dude's mouth?
No.
Okay.
Nope, it's actually the cover is dog tags, bloody dog tags.
Okay, no.
It came out in 2002. I've never seen it, but it's been called the best werewolf movie to come out since the days of The Howling and American Werewolf in London.
Okay.
But it came out in 2002. It's set in Scotland, and it follows a group of British Army soldiers who are dropped in the woods for a training mission against a SAS unit. Well, they track down the SAS unit and realize that they've all been slaughtered. So they start heading out to try to find shelter or somewhere to go, and they realize that there's something tracking them. They're being chased by werewolves. So they find this zoologist who apparently has been out there and has studied these things, and they try to hide, and the werewolves attack. And it's supposed to be just a really, really great Scottish werewolves, which is interesting, but it's supposed to be a really, really great movie.
So
I want to see it.
Essentially, it's fucking Predator.
Yeah. Basically, that's what it is. Just with more than one Predator. But yeah, so that one is one I want to check out. For sure.
All right, I'm down. Dog Soldiers.
Wolfen is another one that I remember seeing it when it came out. Way back when.
I read the book and saw the movie. It was a great movie.
Okay. I don't remember much about the movie, though. That's the thing.
Basically, the way Wolfen ran was there's a developer, and he's essentially buying up and tearing down the ghetto. And these... They're not like werewolves, but they're like super intelligent wolves are killing... executives and different people that have things to do with the development. And I don't know if it's cop, I don't remember, it's been a long time, but there's a guy and a girl that are involved with but not necessarily part of the thing. And what it comes down to is that the Wolfen are and have been they're like these hyper intelligent wolves. They're like as smart as humans or maybe just less. But their role in nature is to take out our weak and infirm. Mm-hmm. So they hang around the ghettos and they take out the sick and the elderly and the homeless and the druggies and stuff. And that's their food source, and that's what they do, and they've been doing it for millennia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that this developer's coming in and basically taking out the ghettos, it's killing their food source, so they're retaliating.
Okay.
And they're taking out, like, no, you can't come in and destroy our hunting grounds. So they're doing that. It was, I remember when I was a kid, it was a pretty damn good scary movie.
Cool.
I mean, it was not, it wasn't American Werewolf in London or anything.
But it was a good movie.
But it was a good movie.
Okay.
A lot of good jump scares and just kind of like get out at you, like, there's... You know, I'm taking a shower. Holy shit, there's a wolf in there. You're like, how did a wolf get in here? And it didn't make any sense. And you find out later that they're actually really smart. And,
right.
You know, they have no problem going through locks. So, that kind of stuff. Okay. But.
And last but not least, the only other one I was going to speak about is, and mainly because the woman that stars in the series is a very sweet lady who I got to spend some time with. And just she's been in a lot of movies. Kate Beckinsale in the Underworld franchise.
I can honestly say I don't think I've ever seen one of those.
Okay, are you familiar with Underworld?
I am familiar with it, but I've never seen the movies.
Okay, because it's the main storyline is the battle between, you know, in the backdrop, the battle between vampires and werewolves.
Right.
These mortal enemies from, you know, way back when. But the special effects are great in that movie. Kate Beckinsale is great in it. I mean, they've made 4 Underworld movies, and they've all been successful.
Yeah.
So it's it was a major franchise. With it, that's another one, just another one of those that's worth checking out.
So you got to meet Kate Beckinsale?
I got to hang out with her in the airport a lot. She's real cool. Her gold digging boyfriend wasn't very nice. And her agent actually cursed me out. But to be cursed out by someone with a British accent is just a really odd thing. Because you don't take them seriously.
Right.
You know, you can't really get offended by it because it's kind of cute.
It's like, are you mad at me for not singing well? Like, what's your problem, bro?
But yeah, Kate Beckinsale was awesome. She really, really sweet lady. She was one of the VIPs I had to escort from the gate all the way through. And awesome. I had to go meet her whenever she left. And I got to see her again. She was really, really cool. Very friendly. Very open to folks. She
seems like a cool chick.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And she... It's not the camera. She's gorgeous. She is gorgeous.
Well, awesome. Well, I think that brings us pretty close to the end. I mean, we got a minute or two if we want to talk about something coming up, or old business, or new business. Or
one thing, I don't know why I wanted to bring this up, but remember the movie Top Secret of Val Kilmer?
Uh-huh.
I forgot how funny that cow scene is in that movie. Do you remember that when they're in a cow costume? And they're in a cow costume to sneak into the gates. And when the camera's on, and it's a real cow with boots on walking around. That's one of the funniest scenes from those parody movies back in the 80s.
Dude, somebody posted a picture. It was one of those things, like, you have a Facebook group and people are going back and forth and they're joking. It's like some, I don't remember what the thing was, but somebody's like, hey, you know, the status update, blah blah blah, and somebody else is like, this is awesome, you should make a movie out of that. And somebody else is like, really? You know, somebody else is like, get a room, guys. It's like show your bromance somewhere else. And then somebody else was like, best bromance ever. And then somebody else was like, nah, this is the best bromance. And it was Bobcat Goldthwait and Sweet Chuck. Like when Sweet Chuck is on his moped and Bobcat's like, ah! And just knocks him off his bike. I'm like, hell yeah, I forgot about that.
I actually watched One Crazy Summer the other day, too. Speaking of Bobcat.
I was a kid named Million.
I used to call him fat and pick on him.
You that little boy.
Hell no. I used to stomp and beat him. Say, why are you so fat? Why are you so fat?
I just love how he like has to think about it. He's like, no. It's just like his foaming at the mouth. Oh, I love Bobcat. Oh, he's so cool.
Have you ever listened to his stand-up?
No.
You have got to check out his stand-up, because he had one he did about 4 or 5 years ago. And he tells all these stories about when he was wild and everything, and in all the movies. It is a fucking must-see stand-up. It is very, very good.
Can you imagine being a director, like, trying to tell him what to do?
Oh, dude, he used to be crazy. I mean, he talks about when he was out promoting Shakes, he was on The Tonight Show. And he set the green room on fire and got arrested for it. They arrested his ass. He says that they were doing Blow, the scene from Blow with him, Johnny Depp, and Paul Reubens. And he looked around the room and he said, anybody in here not on probation? Because Johnny Depp was on probation too for tearing up some hotel room or something.
Wow.
Yeah, Bobcat's got some good stories, man.
I'll have to do a show on him, dude.
Oh, dude, he's awesome.
We got to go back and retrospective his movies. Cause
he's been in so... Shakes the Clown is still one of my favorite all-time independent films. He did a bang-up job on that one.
He's Godzilla. He went around that cigar in his mouth.
Stomping all the houses and everything they have set up.
So good. Well, I mean, he's kind of a werewolf, so I guess it counts.
It fits a little bit into the motif.
All right, guys.
Weird noises.
That was episode 76 with a little interlude into some future episode. It, as always, guys, keep it scary.
Later.
What do you think?